Thanks for coming in, Mr. Mahoney. Do you have your member ID card?
Yep, I have it right here in the FEP Blue app, see?
Great.
It's awesome. The app can also help me find a provider and keep tabs on my deductibles.
Okay, can I...
Oh, yeah, and my out-of-pocket spending and visit limits, and I can call the nurse line.
I'm really glad it does all that, but I only need to see your member ID card.
Oh, that's it? Why didn't you say so?
Fearless is just one tap away. With the new FEP Blue app from Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you can access your health benefits on the go. Download it now at fepblue.org/app.
I'm over Seattle. I'm over what happened last year. That's in the past. And, you know, everybody's 0-0 now. You can't live in the past. Seattle's been a long time away. You know, this is preseason. Now, the beginning of the season, everybody's 0-0. So it really don't matter what happened last year. I'm over last year.
Welcome back to Locked on Vikings. Sam Ekstrom and Sage Rosenfels delivering a daily podcast to you on the Locked on Podcast Network. Sage, back in the saddle with us today. How's it going?
I'm doing great. Got the kids off to their first day of school here in Omaha, Nebraska. And, of course, I had to post the, I don't know what you call it, the standard kid picture on the front stoop of the house. So I posted that on my social media like everybody else does. And the kids are off, and now I've got a little more free time.
So you've got the back-to-school shopping all under your belt. Now you've got your days to yourself. You know, what are you going to do with all that time? You might have to join us every day.
Well, that's a good idea. Monday, Wednesday, Friday works just fine for me. But, you know, I'm doing some writing this fall for The Score, which is a website based out of Toronto, but the majority of their audience actually is in the United States. And so I'll be writing an article every Monday for them. I've got a couple of radio shows, one in Des Moines with Chuck Long, who was sort of my idol growing up, an old Iowa and Detroit Lions quarterback, and I do a radio show here in Omaha. So I'm plenty busy following the NFL, the Big 12 Conference, Iowa State, and obviously the Vikings.
No doubt. Well, let's talk some Vikings. Minnesota with a preseason game tomorrow. They had their final practice in Eden Prairie yesterday. And we get there yesterday, the media rolls in, and they've got noise pumping in to the practice during 11-on-11. They've got this artificial crowd noise. Was that something you ever did to prepare for a loud crowd?
Oh, absolutely. We did that for the majority of away games. Not necessarily on a normal week. Wednesday, Thursday is not as much, but definitely on Friday where you're sort of trying to get used to it. You really want to still teach and coach and correct mistakes and those types of things on Wednesday and Thursday. So you want to get something out of practice, but Friday you try to have those sort of game-like conditions and pump in the music. So we definitely have done that. And Seattle, I think anyone that goes to Seattle, to New Orleans, obviously I think to the old Metrodome, and hopefully now U.S. Bank Stadium, anytime you play at those types of stadiums, you need that extra crowd noise so the team gets used to using all their hand signals and really communicating without actually hearing each other.
Yeah, just experiencing the noise coming out of a little machine gave me respect for what quarterbacks and offensive lines have to deal with, because I could barely talk to the person next to me, and these guys are trying to read the cadence and just go by Teddy Bridgewater's nonverbal signals to read the snap count. It was actually pretty impressive to watch. That's not as easy as you would think.
It is, and you wouldn't believe how many times when I was playing that the center, if it was a loud stadium, would say, hey, you got to speak up a little bit more. And there's places, and you see Tom Brady do it regularly, where they just do a silent snap count, and Tom Brady just sort of taps the center on the rear, and after that, the ball is going to come up within probably a second or so. So there's stadiums where it's so loud that the center can't even hear the quarterback. It's amazing, 80,000 people, the noise it can make and everything. But, yeah, I think it's a smart move by Mike Zimmer to get you to do that. And, even though it's the preseason, it prepares you for things that you're going to do during the regular season. So even though won't be a ton of Teddy Bridgewater in the starters this weekend, it will be a lot of those backups getting sort of used to it too. It's a lot of those guys will be on the team, will be on the roster, come September.
One of the biggest storylines coming out of Winter Park right now is the rematch with Seattle. And I promise you, Sage, and I promise the listeners, I'm not asking these questions. I'm not asking the coaches about revenge or about how bad memories are coming back about losing to Seattle in the postseason. But that seems to be the overriding narrative that people want to discuss, even though there really couldn't be more of a difference between a playoff game and a preseason game. And the players and coaches, I think, have supported that in their responses. But I guess we'll give it the obligatory minute. Blair Walsh facing the team that eliminated the Vikings last year. He had that horrible 27-yard miss. Sage, when it happened, were you shocked by it? I mean, was that a stunning game to you?
It was a stunning game, and it was, you know, a game really, you know, sort of perfectly executed by Mike Zimmer and his staff and the entire team. I mean, their style of football was to play a close ball game, you know, against one of the hottest teams in the NFL. At that point, Seattle, I think they had won maybe 7 of 8, and Russell Wilson, I think, had the best quarterback rating of anybody in the NFL the second half of the season. So they were, you know, coming out with a very, very good team with a hot quarterback, and then played them right down to the wire. And it was a stunning miss. But, you know, a preseason game is not a game where you try to get your revenge. So I always feel like the media or certain people are trying to hype the game so people watch. But really, at the end of the day, I don't think the players really all care all that much. They want to go get through this game, play solid football, not get injured, and sort of move on from there, learn something about your team. But I don't think that this is something that the, you know, Mike Zimmer and his staff are, you know, care all that much as far as revenge. I think the Vikings would much rather get revenge and say the NFC Championship game or sometime down the road in the playoffs when they meet them to try to ruin their season and advance on.
Yeah, I think everybody's a little bit sick of talking about it at Winter Park, to be honest. I did a little research project, though, just for fun. I've checked out kickers who've missed really, really dramatic and devastating kicks, how they've done in years following. And to be honest with you, the results are not good. Not that that's going to translate to Walsh necessarily, but if you look back to Scott Norwood in Super Bowl 25, he went like 62% the following season. Gary Anderson with the 1998 miss in Minnesota, he went 19 of 30. The following season. And then even on a smaller scale, Mike Vanderjack missed a really bad kick back in 2005.
The idiot kicker, as Peyton Manning liked to call him, our idiot kicker.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, and he had a really bad year the following year as well, and he actually had to switch teams. So maybe the players don't like to push this storyline, but in the back of their minds, maybe there's a little something there. I mean, we haven't seen Blair Walsh encounter any adversity yet this season. It'll be interesting to see how he responds to maybe his first miss.
It will be, and I think that the Vikings are obviously hopeful that he doesn't fall into that category of guys who've struggled after, you know, the big miss kick, and I don't think he will. I think a lot of times it has to do with you know, what the man is made up of, and I think we all saw how Blair dealt with that kick, the support that he had from his team, really from the fans. I don't think that, you know, everyone was very disappointed what happened, but also everyone understands he made some unbelievable kicks in that game, which I think only a few kickers in the NFL, you know, could have made, you know, 40, 45, 50 yards, and that type of weather is really, really tough to do. So I think the team, everyone really does still appreciate how good he is. He's one of the best kickoff guys in the NFL as far as touchbacks are concerned. So, you know, hopefully, you know, Blair Walsh is mentally strong enough to get over that kick, and I believe he is.
I said I was going to let this storyline die, but I have one more question about it. I imagine you did some holding in your day as well, and I look back on that kick, and, you know, Jeff Locke failed to get the laces around, and it was such a cold day. Is it tough to hold in cold conditions like that? Do you kind of lose feeling in your hands?
Well, yeah, that's, you're trying to fix that on the sidelines, right? So I held in 2010 with the New York Giants. I held in college for 3 years. I was always sort of the backup holder throughout my NFL career. But, you know, when you're a punter, you're the backup quarterback, whoever's holding, I mean, you have to somehow keep your hands warm on the sidelines. They've got those big jets that shoot out hot air. So you got your hand muff to keep your hands warm. So that was never a problem. I always also wore gloves when I held. I did not trust those slippery, you know, kicking balls, which do not get worked in like the regular quarterback balls do. So the laces, from what I was always told, whether it was Olindo Mare down in Miami, whether it was Lawrence Tynes up with the New York Giants, the laces didn't matter to them too much unless you're actually kicking the laces. That's the only time it really can have an effect on the kick. If they're facing towards the holder or the other way, or obviously towards the uprights is what you prefer, the only time it really can affect is when it's actually facing the kicker. So, I think Lawrence Tynes would probably say at that instance, you know, at the end of the day, it's 27 yards. You got to make it either way. It shouldn't have it that big of an effect on a shorter kick. So, but in those cold conditions, it is hard. You sort of want to just catch it and get it down. And you're not so worried about, spinning the ball. I mean, the ground is frozen, all those types of things. So it has a little play in what the kicker, what the holder does. You really just want to get the ball down, but you prefer if the laces are anywhere, they're just not facing the kicker.
Quickly, before we continue, just to remind you, Locked On Vikings is available on iTunes. Make sure to subscribe, leave a rating, and a review. Let us know what you think. We'd appreciate it. Also, subscribe on Audio Boom. You can find the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter at Locked On P. Sage is on Twitter at Sage Rosenfels 18. And yours truly on Twitter at Sam Ekstrom. No C, just a K, E-K-S-T-R-O-M. We had an interesting conversation with Mike Zimmer the other day about Adrian Peterson potentially playing in the preseason. Now, he rarely does this. I don't think he's taken a preseason snap since 2011. If I'm remembering correctly, Sage, 2009, when Favre came in, Peterson was with him, I think, in the third preseason game at Houston, and Peterson went off on roughly an 80-yard touchdown run on the first drive. Does that ring a bell?
That does, and I think I remember Brett coming over to the sideline going, this isn't too hard. This is pretty easy to hand the ball off to that guy. I think he was waiting for that for about his first 18 years of his career to have a back like Adrian. So, I played with Adrian a couple years. Played with Ricky Williams, who had led the NFL in rushing when I was down in Miami. So I've seen that played where a lot of times you don't have those guys who are veterans go out there and take extra hits in the preseason. I mean, you sort of think the only thing that can happen are bad things, an injury. They get frustrated because they've got three carries for 2 yards or something. My preference, when you have a player like that, there's really no reason to go out there and try to prove it to anybody that the guy can still play. I mean, at the end of the day, AP is going to be AP in week one, whether he gets any carries in the preseason or not. But obviously Mike Zimmer wants to try something different this year, and you just hope that Adrian doesn't get injured.
Yeah, and I think last year the talk was, well, Adrian didn't play in the preseason, and then he came out in week one and was incredibly rusty. But that was more a symptom of taking a lot of the offseason off. He didn't play the year before because of those off-the-field issues. This year, he's had a full offseason. He's coming off a very successful year. I'm sure he's in much better shape. We've all heard about this big gym that he's running down in Houston. I don't think the preseason is as tantamount for Adrian this season than it was last season. But maybe Adrian's pushing for it. I know he's always the one who wants to get more reps, more plays in. Maybe Adrian will have a friendly clash with Mike Zimmer and the running back will get his way.
Well, I think with the way the NFL is anymore and watching, being done with my career, you look back and I always think to myself, for the premier players, the guys who've been starting for 8-10 years, I really don't think they need to play almost at all in the preseason unless they're fighting for their job, unless they're sort of fighting for a spot on the team, fighting to start with somebody else. The preseason is so good for rookies, for young players, for those guys who are trying to make the team, guys trying to show that even though they're a linebacker, they're good on the punt team and they're good on special teams, those types of things. It's a great place for young guys to learn. And I would not have played in the preseason or in the NFL as long as I had without playing a lot in the preseason. The backup quarterback plays a ton. It seemed like almost every game I played a full quarter, but a lot of times a half. So I throughout the four games of the preseason, it seemed like I would have played almost, two full games myself. So in the case that I would get thrown into a real ball game, it wasn't the first time I'd been out there, that year. So I think the preseason is very, very important for those backup players, for those young guys trying to make it on the roster. But for those starters, for those Pro Bowl type of guys, I don't think it's nearly as important for the young guys.
In yesterday's podcast, I touched on some of the nagging injuries that are going on at Vikings practice lately. They've got about half a dozen guys that are missing time with a minor ailment, one of them being Jarius Wright. Now, Jarius Wright, their starting slot receiver, has been very reliable over the past 4 years. But with him out, Adam Thielen, the local Mankato product, getting a lot of run with the number one team, and he's a great story, who was undrafted, has worked his way first onto the practice squad, then onto the special teams units, and then last year started getting more and more reps with the offense. And now it seems like he could be number three in line behind Stephon Diggs and Charles Johnson. What have you seen from Adam Thielen, and do you think he can be impactful this season?
Well, I definitely, and I think it's nice that we're talking about the Vikings' depth at receiver. It's something that Vikings fans have not talked about, you know, probably in over a decade. It's always been an issue up in Minnesota, really since probably Randy Moss left, is having a premier receiver, but also having depth of that position. So, you know, this isn't the Drew Bledsoe, Tom Brady, you know, veteran goes out and young guy comes in situation. I think it's nice that, I'm sure Jarius Wright will be back, but it's nice that Thielen's getting those reps, getting some action, and he's obviously proving that he's a legit NFL player. And again, that's what's so great about the preseason, is that these young guys who may have been at smaller schools, may have been on the practice squad last year, they actually get to go out and really prove that they're here, that they're NFL players, they can play at the highest levels, and it's pretty obvious that he is making the most of his opportunity.
Anybody else you have your eye on Thursday, Sage? There's so many battles across the field. You've got the battle at safety, the battle for linebacker depth. The right tackle position is still supposedly up for grabs between Andre Smith and TJ Clemmings. Where are you going to be looking?
Well, that second safety position is vital. And, you know, opposite Harrison Smith, they've been sort of looking for a guy for the last few years to fill into that spot and either just be a solid safety or very, very good safety. And to have two good safeties in the Mike Zimmer defense is very, very important. He expects a lot out of that position. The guys to be able to cover, guys be able to tackle, guys be able to play, you know, deep in the middle, and harass people in the back end there. So that second safety spot is very, 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 very important. I think the offensive line is always something that I'm looking at for this team. Because that's been an issue the last few years, with John Sullivan being out all of last year, the majority of last year. Obviously, Phil Loholt's now retired, but he was out all last year too. That was sort of their weakness on the football team. So that's an issue with not only the front, the first five, but with depth, that offensive line. They really need to create that there. That's sort of the weakness of the team, I believe. And I think it's other than quarterback, the most important sort of position on the team is the offensive line, because if they're not good, you can't run the ball, you can't throw the ball, your defense is out in the field all the time. So that's a position that I'll be watching. So whether the teams are blitzing and the offensive line's picking them up, or they're giving the running back some space in the run game, that's a position that I'll be watching.
Just to quickly backtrack to that second safety battle, I was talking to Mike Zimmer yesterday about that, and it from what it sounds, from what Zimmer says, the two most important factors in that second safety position are reliability and communication. And he referenced Antone Exum, a third-year player who's never really figured it out, and he said, it doesn't matter how many good plays you make, it's how many bad plays you give up, meaning that you have to be reliable and consistent in that you're not going to have 2 to 3 lapses a game where you miss your coverage. That's why Andrew Sandejo won the job last year, is because he's very intelligent back there and he's often in the right place. You also have to be able to communicate, because as the safety, you're that back line of defense. You see the play developing in front of you, and you often have to communicate that to your side of the field, whether it's the outside linebacker, whether it's the cornerback. It's on you to recognize and communicate what's going on. So it's going to come down to a guy like Sandejo again, the incumbent who signed the contract extension. He's having a pretty decent camp. And then, you know, Michael Griffin, the longtime veteran, I heard somebody say, you don't fake your way for 10 years in the NFL being a dumb guy. So clearly Michael Griffin knows a thing or two about playing that position. These reps for him are going to be very important too.
Yeah, you know, I really like Griffin in that spot, and you know, they call it the safety position for a reason. You are a lot of times the last line of defense, and when you're in the back, And you're, as you were talking about, communicating to the guys up front, you can see everything. You can see the formations. You can see the motions. You can see when teams come into a stack. And a lot of times when you're up close to the line, say a linebacker or a corner that's bumped, you can't see everything. You're sort of listening for guys behind you to tell you what type of technique to use, if you're going to in and out a player, if you're going to go 3-on-2 over a slot combination. You're sort of waiting for that communication behind you, and you know, that's tough in some of those, you know, those big stadiums. So the safety position is so important because you are the last line of defense many times. You have to cover up where other guys make mistakes. If a linebacker screws up and a running back has a huge hole, you have to be 100 out of 100 in making that tackle in the hole. You can't be in the wrong spot as well, because in the NFL anymore, with how good quarterbacks are, with how good guys like Aaron Rodgers are, if you get opposition just a little bit, they will take advantage every single time. So you have to be, play at basically 100% back there as far as your position, but also your communication in the secondary is much more on the safeties than it is on the corners.
His name is Sage Rosenfels on Twitter at Sage Rosenfels 18. I'm Sam Ekstrom at Sam Ekstrom on Twitter. Make sure to also listen to Locked On NFL with Matt Williamson, and coming soon, Locked On Timberwolves with Alan Horton and Jim Peterson. This is Locked On Vikings, the preseason game tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Sage, do you think you'll make it all the way through? That's going to be a late one.
I will be up for that. I'll watch that game for sure. And my last memory of playing at that stadium was 2010 with the Giants. And speaking of that loud stadium, we had talked about going out there and really early in the game trying to take the crowd out of it, which of course means get up by a couple of touchdowns. And sure enough, it was 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. I think it was 35-7 at halftime. We really blew them out in the first half. So that stadium crowd noise never came into play up there. So a little recommendations for the Vikings: get out and get the lead early. It'll make your day a heck of a lot easier.
Next time we talk to you, Sage, we will be dissecting everything we saw on Thursday night. That'll be Friday morning on Locked On Vikings. Always good talking to you, Sage. Enjoy your day.
Sounds good. See you Friday.
Big thanks to Cumulus Media for the studio space. Big thanks to Cold Omaha for helping promote the show. We might have a guest from Cold Omaha on tomorrow. We'll wait and see. Locked On Vikings, Sage Rosenfels, Sam Ekstrom. See you tomorrow.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst. Catalyst.